TUC Radio San Francisco, Time of Useful Consciousness. Biotechnology, the Last Invasion, Peter Rossett and Pat Mooney. All attention was focused on Seattle in early December 1999. In the midst of preparations for the huge street demonstrations by unions, church members, and youth, hundreds of meetings were held over the period of a week. They discussed and clarified the growing impact of the World Trade Organization on all aspects of our lives. The WTO has had an active role in promoting bioengineered food. Europe's refusal to accept genetically modified corn and soy shipments from the U.S. was before the WTO for a ruling. Now the atmosphere was tense, because the Clinton administration had threatened to make biotechnology the premier trade issue in Seattle. Pointing to the public here in the U.S., the administration had boasted that nobody here seems to care that genetically modified foods are grown in open fields and have become part of our daily food. But do people really know what biotechnology entails? And would they care if they were informed? The panel on biotechnology at the teach-in of the International Forum on Globalization drew an overflow audience. Today you will hear the opening remarks by the moderator Peter Rossett, Executive Director of Food First, followed by Pat Mooney, the visionary co-founder of RAFI, the Rural Advancement Foundation International in Canada. Here is Peter Rossett opening the proceedings.
I'm the Executive Director of Food First, the Institute for Food and Development Policy. We're based in Oakland, California. We were founded 25 years ago by a woman named Frances Moore LePay, who wrote a book that I'm sure you've all read called Diet for a Small Planet. And never was that title more appropriate than this week in Seattle. If you travel to the Philippines today and you ask small farmers who grow rice what they think of genetically modified rice seeds containing their own pesticide that are being promoted of late, they have a very good piece of wisdom, a parable that pretty much, in my opinion, says it all. It turns out that small farmers of rice have for ages supplemented their diet with snails that live in the water in rice paddies. These snails are an excellent protein source, and they're a very important component in the local cuisine and the local cooking. Well, during the Marcos years, Imelda discovered or heard of a snail called the golden snail, l'escargot d'or o caracol dorado. And this snail, she thought, would absolutely revolutionize the rural Philippines and would basically end hunger by providing far more protein to small rice farmers. So she brought the golden snail to the Philippines, and small projects were set up in rural areas to raise the golden snail. Well, it turned out that the golden snail didn't taste very good. In fact, it was absolutely awful. It couldn't be used in the local cuisine, and very soon all of the projects were abandoned. Unfortunately, the snails escaped. And the snails, it turned out, had a very strong appetite for young rice plants. And today, one of the principal pest problems that small farmers of rice in the Philippines face is the golden snail. And they actually have to apply very large quantities of very toxic pesticides, some based on heavy metals, in order to control the golden snail. Not only that, but the golden snail has proven to be a very powerful competitor and has outcompeted almost all of the local snails, has basically driven them to the brink of extinction, and has now deprived those small farmers of their key protein source that they had depended upon previously. If you ask those farmers what they think of genetically modified rice seeds that are supposed to solve their problems of hunger, they say, that's easy. It's just another golden snail. We hear all the time about miracle technologies. Pesticides were originally supposed to resolve all of the pest problems of the world's farmers for mere pennies, alleviate the drudgery of farm work, and we're supposed to be harmless. Well, today, it's genetically modified seeds, transgenics, seeds that have genes moved across the species barrier, some that contain their own pesticide, some that are tolerant of herbicides. And the same companies, the very same companies who once told us that pesticides were safe, that pesticides would end hunger, now tell us that genetically modified crops are safe, that genetically modified crops will end hunger. The question is, should we believe them this time around? The idea that a miracle technology of food production could end hunger is basically something that we've been struggling against for 25 years at Food First. We've demonstrated with very careful research from around the world over and over again, time and again, that the notion that hunger in the world, and there are 800 million people, as we've heard before, who are chronically undernourished, 36 million right here in the United States who go without far too often. The very notion that that hunger is due to our lack of ability to produce enough food is patently wrong. It was a lie when they were trying to sell us pesticides, and it's a lie when they're trying to sell us genetically modified seeds. The world today produces more food per man, woman, and child on this planet than ever before in human history. And in fact, the last 35 years has seen food production outstrip population growth at a faster rate than previously. Today, there's more than 4 pounds of food for every person on the planet, more than 2 pounds of milk and dairy products and poultry, more than 1 pound of grain, really more food than anybody could ever need, yet hunger persists. It's not because we don't know how to produce enough food. It's because people are too poor to have access to the food that's available. Hunger is really the paradox of plenty, hunger amidst abundance. And boosting crop yields by 25% is not going to change a situation where too many people can't buy the food that's already available, or too many people have been displaced from their ancestral farmland and are therefore unable to use any agricultural technology, traditional or bioengineered, because they've been deprived of their basic right to land. So the basic argument, the Monsanto full-page ads in the New York Times every week, is wrong. People are not hungry because of our inability to produce food. And in those places in the world where food production is lagging, it's not because of a lack of technological know-how. It's because those famous free market forces that the WTO is promoting has made it impossible for people to make a living by producing food for local consumption. People know how to grow food. Farmers know how to grow food. But when they have to compete with Cargill and Archer Daniels Midland, who get preferential treatment in their own country, that makes it pretty difficult, regardless of the technology that they have at their disposal. Our next speaker is Mr. Pat Mooney, a true visionary. 20 years ago, he wrote the book Seeds of the Earth, pointing out the lies and the peril behind the hybrid seed industry. Last year, he put out the book The Parts of Life. When I was, in 1984, I was a scientist working as an internationalist in Nicaragua with the Sandinista Revolution. And we were very excited in the national and regional meeting of Central American agronomists that was going to be held in Nicaragua for the first time under the revolutionary government, that the guest speaker was going to be Pat Mooney to tell us about hybrid seeds. So, and that was an amazing, formative event for me in terms of bringing ecology, agriculture, and politics together. So therefore, it's a tremendous pleasure for me all these years later to present to you Pat Mooney, the co-founder of the Rural Advancement Foundation International, RAFI, one of the non-governmental organizations around the world that is a true leader on these issues. Another website that is indispensable is www.rafi.org, one of the best websites around for information on this, and Pat Mooney, one of the best leaders and visionaries on this issue for many years.
Thank you very much, Peter. We're not exactly the happy news panel, are we? Let me continue brightening up your day. One of the developments and inventions we haven't really talked about yet, though, on this panel is who's making the decisions about all this? Who's making the decisions about biotechnology and where it's going to head? Who's inserting that into the WTO? And who's going to make the decisions during the coming week? Who's really doing the negotiating here? That's pretty straightforward, I think, at the end of the day, not a surprise to anybody. There are really three groups at play in Seattle in the next few days. One group is ourselves. What do we call ourselves? Civil society organizations, non-governmental organizations. The other one, I think non-governable organizations, perhaps, over the next week. That'd be nice. There's a second group we have... People who like to call themselves civil society organizations, industry, let's call them uncivil society organizations, perhaps. And then we have the third group, and they're here, by the way, that second group in force, and probably a number of them here in the auditorium, in fact. And then the third group that's, in theory, negotiating on behalf of humanity over the next week are the governments. And the governments could best be described as, these days, like us. They're sort of NGOs with guns. And they get to collect taxes because they do that. But in terms of their influence and power, and frankly, they are the least powerful of those three forces that will be in Seattle over the next several days. The forces that are there are ourselves, the civil society organizations, and we can't deny the force of industry. They are there, they are powerful, and they are the ones telling most of our governments what to do. Not all of our governments, but most of our governments, my government in Canada certainly, your government in the United States certainly, are being bossed by those biotech companies and some of the other companies. And that, let's go back perhaps and look over, Peter's given me a chance to talk about the last few years. Let me go back and look at what's changed in the last few years in terms of the ownership and control of life, because that's really what we finally are discussing here. 20 years ago or so, when we first began in RAFI to monitor what was happening in the seed industry, we actually had to track 7,000 different public and private seed companies around the world. As we tracked those companies, we got some sense of what was happening, where the technology was heading, who was doing what kind of research. Not one single corporation occupied a significant percentage of the global seed market 20 years ago. This year, we're just doing our sum up for the end of 1999 now, so I'll be vague about the figures because the changes are taking place literally daily. But this year, the top 10 seed companies on this planet will have about 40% of the global commercial market in seed. Just 10 companies, gone from the 7,000 down to 10 that dominate the global market. In fact, that overestimates reality. The reality is, last year, for example, if you looked at genetically modified seeds, the cutting end of biotechnology, and that being marketed in the fields around the world, the entire, virtually 100% of the global market for biotech seeds came from four companies. That's all. This year it will expand slightly, and next year it will probably decrease slightly with Monsanto. But it's a very, very small group of companies. 20 years ago, if you looked at veterinary medicines, frankly, I don't know how many companies there were. We weren't looking at veterinary medicines 20 years ago. But today, the top 10 veterinary medicine companies on this planet, again, occupy two-thirds of the global market, actually 69% of the global market for veterinary medicines, just 10 companies. And all of them, again, moving into biotechnology, or in biotechnology. Thirdly, in the third sector, if you look at what's happened in agricultural chemicals, well, Tim said this morning that the top 10 companies have 94% of the global market for pharmaceutical, pesticides. Actually, that's really stretching it, because there aren't really 10 companies anymore. Really, there are 9, perhaps going down now to 8 or 7 before the year is out, that occupy 92 or 93% of the global market. That last one that makes 10 has got about 1% of the market. Now, that's different from 20 years ago, because 20 years ago, there were 65 pesticide manufacturers around the world who are all innovative and developing new pesticides. So now we're down to 9. 20 years ago, in pharmaceuticals, there were, if you look at the top 20 pharmaceutical companies around the world, they had 5%, only 5% of the global market for pharmaceuticals. This year, the top 10 companies will come very close to half of the global market for pharmaceuticals. Just 10. From 20 that had 5% down to 10 that have almost 50% this year. Now, the special thing about all this is that these companies are, in fact, transgenic. They actually managed to leap species barriers themselves because it's, in fact, the same companies, whether we're talking about the pesticide industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the seed industry, or veterinary medicines, the same companies. There are about 1,500 biotech companies around the world. 18 of those companies have more than 25% of all of the major patents in biotechnology. And in fact, again, the handful of companies, that group that ranks in the top 5 or 10 across the board in all of the life sciences, whether it's our health, animal health, crop health, or anything else, those same companies are the ones that dominate all the patents. They're the leaders and the ones who are making the decisions this coming week in the WTO. Now, what kinds of decisions are they going to be making for us? What kind of direction are they going to take us with the technology? Well, again, Peter was kind enough to mention Terminator technology, which is certainly one of the things that's perhaps got us most concerned in the last couple of years. It's not much satisfaction to us that companies like AstraZeneca or Monsanto have said they won't actually exploit Terminator technology. They're backing away from that. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, which is the co-inventor of Terminator, is continuing to proceed with the technology in ways which I find absolutely frightening. But let's go on and look at where Terminator goes. Why is it, for example, that AstraZeneca is not really concerned about pursuing Terminator technology, the holy grail of the seed industry, for a whole of a century? And why is it that Monsanto is willing to say that they'll step away from it? Because frankly, at the end of the day, the Terminator is not that important. What the Terminator showed was that you can use an external chemical and you can manipulate the traits inside a plant in such a way that that external chemical will turn on or turn off that trait. Now, the trait the Terminator works with, of course, is the one that allows the plant to rejuvenate, the fertility of the seed. But there are lots of other traits. The downside of the Terminator, of course, is that farmers have to go back to the market every year to buy seed. That's actually a downside for the company, because the company has to provide the seed every year. That means it's got to go through the expenses of doing research, multiplying seed, going around the world to have it multiplied, bringing it back, warehousing it, getting it out to the farmers. Would it be possible to develop a trait control technology where the farmers could save the seed, but they'd still be dependent upon the company? It's not hard to do. All you've got to do is guarantee that the seed will commit suicide at the end of the growing season if it does not get the external chemical application. That's all you have to do. There are now more than 40 Terminator-style patents or trait control patents that have been granted around the world to all of the major companies that are involved in this industry. There's no one that's outside of that boundary. In the work that they're doing, they specifically tie the development of the trait controls to specific chemicals. They theorize they can control crop production through the application or non-application of a herbicide, an insecticide, a fungicide, even fertilizer. Proprietary fertilizers or herbicides particularly adapted to allow for the control of that trait. Another disadvantage of the Terminator was that it stopped the crop for the next year. Farmers would still have a crop this year. They just wouldn't be able to save the seed, but the seed could still be used as a commodity. It could be sold or it could be eaten if you want to eat that kind of stuff. Problem would be for the next growing season. And of course, in theory, perhaps in the next growing season, if there's more than one or two companies out there, you can run around and try and get seed from somebody else, if you're a farmer. But through trait control, or traitor technology, as we prefer to call it, through that control, you can actually kill the crop in the current year. You can, for example, in the case of the cotton crop, destroy the quality of the staple, or you can perhaps make it sprout too soon, or you can cause it to wither, you can cause the protein level to drop immediately. You can do all kinds of things to control traits in the plant, which means that it will die this year, which gives you a chance to give instant famines around the world. And that is exactly, if you read through the patents, exactly the kind of research that's being pursued by all the companies. And of course, it makes perfect sense. Companies no longer then have to worry about stockpiling seed or even doing plant breeding, even doing research. Once the four companies that dominate the seed industry, or maybe even three, are all in the same technology, and once farmers are hooked on that, then forget about organic agriculture. Forget about any possibility of getting away from chemicals. Everyone will be hooked on that seed and that seed alone. And companies don't have to do any work, not even the stockpiling. The farmers have to buy the chemical, perhaps consistently, perhaps several times a year, to maintain their crop in the field. If they stop buying the chemical, the crop dies. That's biological warfare. That's what it comes down to. The United States was the country that pushed for the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention in 1972. It was finally ratified in 1973. That convention specifically prohibits the development of technologies like Terminator or like traitor technology. When the U.S. government announced the patent on March 3rd of 1998, the U.S. government together, U.S. Department of Agriculture, together with Delta and Pineland Company, now owned by Monsanto, or about to be owned by Monsanto, when that patent was announced, the U.S. Department of Agriculture said the objective for the technology was to target farmers in the third world. They said that specifically in their news releases. They said the reason to target farmers in the third world was to prevent them from saving seed. They gave no beneficial reason for the technology, no agronomic benefit of any kind whatsoever. They said it had no purpose other than to stop farmers from doing something they've done for 12,000 years. That is a direct contravention of Article 1 of the Biotechnology or Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention now being renegotiated in Geneva. If the United States and other countries believe in that convention, then they should apply it. And traitor technology and terminator technology should be dropped immediately. Now, let me give you an example of what's going to happen if it is not dropped at the WTO. Let's say a trade dispute develops between Brazil and the United States over the soybean market. And in that trade dispute, Brazil decides to go it alone, the United States disagrees. All the United States would have to do, if it's Monsanto's Roundup soybeans that are being sold in Brazil, which is what the market is intended for, in fact, that's the goal for Monsanto and for Brazil, the government at least, if that actually is pursued, then all the U.S. trade representative has to do is cut off the export of the Roundup that de-triggers the suicide sequence in the soybeans in Brazil. That's all it has to do. You call that not a trade sanction, but a trait sanction in this case. But it has the same effect of suddenly bringing to a country to its knees. 25 years ago this month, I was in Rome at the World Food Conference, and I heard Earl Butz, then the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, say in a press conference that food was a political weapon. He said it was one of the most effective weapons in their negotiating kit. That was American policy 1 year after the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention was adopted. I don't think that policy's changed in the last 25 years. Food is still, in Iraq, as we heard today, in Cuba, wherever, being used as a weapon. And I don't believe for a moment that the United States government or other Western governments using Terminator technology or traitor tech technology would actually refuse to use this technology and step away from it if they felt they could bring other countries to do their bidding through control of their food supply. Where do we take all of this? I think it's to challenge the right of the WTO to take over agricultural issues and to undermine food security. In 1996, at the World Food Summit that was held in Rome, the United States government took the initiative in trying to stop food to be regarded as a human right. It took the initiative in trying to prevent that. It didn't succeed in the end, but it did mute the text enormously. But the United States did get agreement from other governments that, in fact, food security no longer requires that you produce your own food. As long as you're able to buy it from some other country, then you still have food security, according to the U.S. rules. Now, that was bad enough. But if even the food you grow in your own country is dependent upon trader technologies from the other country, then you've lost that food security as well. Then the entire food system is in the hands of that handful of companies. And that's outrageous. That shouldn't be allowed. And it shouldn't be allowed in WTO. People in this country have just finished Thanksgiving. And during Thanksgiving, everybody had, I'm sure there's lots of stories about in the press here, I imagine, genetically modified mashed potatoes, genetically modified peas, genetically modified squash, turkeys that came from fattened by genetically modified corn and soybeans. In fact, the turkey's in doubt. They put so many human genes into so many crop species and so many animal species experimentally, this will probably be the last year the turkey doesn't read the menu. But all their other turkeys are going to be negotiating at the WTO. But, actually, they've actually gone further than that. They've taken, a few months ago, they actually were able to take 3 of our human chromosomes and insert them into rats. 3 out of 23 chromosomes, that's a lot. You know, I mean, in theory, they could probably run for office in this country. But maybe they are. Human genes and politicians would be nice. At the end of the Thanksgiving weekend, after everybody has all talked about these things and perhaps said as a ritual the Lord's Prayer, please remember that the prayer, "Give us this day our daily bread," should not be a prayer to the WTO or to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Thank you.
That was Pat Mooney, co-founder of RAFI, the Rural Advancement Foundation International in Canada. He is the author of the classic Seeds of the Earth and The Parts of Life. He and Peter Rossett were recorded in Seattle on the eve of the meeting of the WTO. You can get a 60-minute tape on biotechnology with Pat Mooney and Peter Rossett for $12. Or you can get an 80-page transcript of the whole WTO series with Vandana Shiva, Maud Barlow, José Bové, Pat Mooney on issues of environmental impacts, privatization, water and food security, and much more for $12 as well. For a credit card order, call toll-free 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 1-877-TUC-TAPE. Or send your check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. TUC Radio's website is www.tucradio.org. My name is Mariah Gelarden. Thank you for listening.